Hey, it's Keith Anderson from Decarbonize.co, inviting you to join our brand new Slack community for retail, e-commerce, and consumer product professionals that want to keep up with what's new, interesting, and actionable in industry, climate, and sustainability action, and connect with your peers. As I got into this work, one of the things that I found so invigorating is how passionate and willing to help everyone is. But I haven't found a community composed of people across functions in the industry that are working in or want to work in climate and sustainability. And so we're launching the community to connect both sustainability experts and practitioners and people in conventional roles like product design, packaging, supply chain, marketing, and merchandising to share their work, ask for help, connect about career opportunities, keep up with the latest industry development, and we'll be previewing who our upcoming guests on the podcast will be and giving you an opportunity to pose questions to our guests. So I can't wait to meet you and have you meet some of the other members of the community. To join us, you can visit decarbonize.co. You'll see a call to action on the homepage, or use the intelligence menu at the top of the page where you'll also see a link to join.
Welcome to Decarbonizing Commerce, where we explore what's new, interesting, and actionable at the intersection of climate innovation and commerce. I'm your host, Keith Anderson, and together we'll meet entrepreneurs and innovators reinventing retail, e-commerce, and consumer products through the lenses of low carbon and commercial viability.
Welcome to the Decarbonizing Commerce podcast. I'm Keith Anderson, and today I've got Mike Newman, founder and CEO of Returnity Innovations, a partner to retailers and brands for reusable packaging, mostly in the internal logistics leg of the supply chain. And I don't think we were recording when Mike told me he's sometimes referred to as the reuse realist. And having spoken to him for a while, I can appreciate why. Mike's background is a blend of entrepreneurship as well as environmental science and policy experience. And that's one reason that I think he's got a realistic view of the impact that reuse can have in commerce. But I think another reason is the part of the supply chain that he is most focused on and where he's guided Returnity. And as you listen, I think you'll learn, as I did, about some of the reasons that the internal logistics leg is one of the most viable places for reusable packaging in commerce today, and some of the challenges and barriers and opportunities, and what would have to be true for reuse to be economically and operationally viable in some of the other consumer-facing areas that we continue to see interest and innovation. So here's Mike Newman, founder and CEO of Returnity Innovations. Mike, good to see you. Thanks for joining the Decarbonizing Commerce podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you tell us a bit about Returnity and where it fits in the reusable packaging landscape?
Well, Returnity really helps brands and retailers to reduce the impact of their packaging, certainly from a sustainability standpoint, less material and less waste, but also more operationally efficient and ideally and ultimately less expensive. Usually what we focus on is what would be called secondary packaging. So it's the packaging that the brand uses to get the thing to the customer, shipping boxes, reusable shopping bags and the like. And it really just innovating on how to implement those in a way that can work on all levels for the retailer.
And how did you end up in this business?
Well, my background has been in sustainability and growth companies. I've always had a passion for the space. I did an environmental policy degree as an undergrad. I spent 5 years at the Sierra Club as part of their DC lobbying and legislative team. And then for the last 20 years, just working on supply chain and logistics. Returnity actually had a bit of an atypical origin story. It was originally a reusable shopping bag business, just making shopping bags for companies primarily to use as like swag at corporate like conferences. And ThredUp and James Reinhardt, which has become this publicly traded huge company focused on apparel and sustainability, asked us if we could make them a reusable shipping bag. So it was actually his impetus, and he was the original investor, liked what we came up with as a reusable bag for shipping. And here we are over 7 years later now, keeping on innovating in the space. But it actually was his first request that sent us on this journey.
Some of the most interesting businesses come directly from a customer request. And sounds like this was a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, I love, you know, you love that sort of, I don't know, but let me try. And that I don't know, but let me try moment led us down this path. That's been really quite fulfilling. So every time I see him, I remind him that it's all that one ask that he had and how much we appreciate it.
So secondary packaging covers both, I guess, customer facing, you know, direct to consumer or even indirect e-commerce, but I suppose also internal logistics.
Yeah, that behind the scenes is obviously not something consumers will see generally, but it's an enormous amount of packaging use. In the U.S., we use enough cardboard boxes to pave a cardboard road from New York to L.A. and back three times a year. It's a shocking amount of cardboard. And just what's used to get goods to stores alone is billions of dollars worth of packaging. So it all adds up. What every leg of the supply chain you're seeing packaging being used.
And are you seeing any split in interest or demand among retailers and brands that you work with? Are they responding more to consumer interest and want shoppers to be able to see something, or is just a pure operational efficiency play in the internal side where the action is?
I think it's been an evolution. Certainly, they're aware that consumers have a sort of broad frustration with packaging. So that, you know, if you poll consumers and say, do you prioritize brands that offer more sustainable packaging options? Will you spend more on more sustainable packaging options? The consensus and growing consensus is yes. That's nice in a poll. In practice, I think the evidence is much more wanting. So brands are having to like confront this duality of expectations from their end customers of what, you know, how they're addressing sustainability issues, but not necessarily taking personal action as individuals. And so figuring out solutions that can kind of align to that, but still make sense economically has definitely been a journey. And then our ability to support them through that has evolved too, to figure out, you know, what's the right path.
Well, I know you're going to help me unpack these topics much more eloquently than I can, but when I think about reusable packaging, really, I think of two challenges in a sense. One is the economic side, which you mentioned, which, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it's by definition a challenge. It's just a different economic model than single use. And the other is sort of the behavioral side. So I'd love maybe to take those one at a time and potentially in each of those different contexts, that is on the consumer side and on the internal side, you know, in your experience, how are each of those stakeholders approaching reusable packaging, at least as you're delivering it?
Well, I think that there's a lot of flirtation with reusables for e-commerce over the last 5 years, and those have largely kind of tailed off for the reason that it just doesn't work, frankly.
Why doesn't it work?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, there's isolated cases like, you know, clients like Rent the Runway, rental brands, things like that, where it's going to come back because that's part of the business model. But that's few and far between. In an open context e-commerce setting, You really need to get 75, 80%, ideally 90% of the packaging returned from the end customer to make it work environmentally, let alone economically. The evidence is that generally it's going to be about 50% or less of consumers will return it, even if they opted in at checkout, even if they paid a premium, which some companies have tried. You're still just not going to get it back enough. So on top of all the challenges for an e-commerce brand, now I have to have paper or cardboard and the reusable, and I got to train my team to remember which stock to pull from, depending on what the customer, it just creates a lot of challenges. And given that it's more expensive and you're not going to get it back enough, unfortunately, it's just not really proven viable in that context. So, brands have just learned that, as they all know, it's very hard to change consumer behavior, particularly at scale. To do it as an individual company is almost impossible. These are sort of society level evolutions that we need to be thinking about. And so putting it in a reusable to ship you your order is not victory. Victory comes when it keeps getting reused. It just doesn't happen right now. So they've had to look at other applications where reusables can actually be viable today. And fortunately, that's been a challenge for us too as a business to make sure we have a growth in the future. And fortunately, we've been able to find those applications, but they tend to be internal logistics employee managed processes rather than consumer behavior driven.
Yeah. In the past life, I used to say it's a lot easier to get people to use what we're making when we're paying them as employees than if we're asking them to pay us as customers. And it's an interesting point in terms of adoption and viability. If what you're really doing is re-engineering an internal workflow, and it is part of your training and can be measured as a KPI, it's a lot different than something you're asking a busy household to handle.
That's right. And, if you ask people how they feel about packaging, they'll tell you, I don't like packaging. But people don't interact with packaging, like this broad concept that they interact with a package and then another package. They're busy. The kid needs a diaper change. They got to run to work. It's very hard to expect consumers to really profoundly change how they interact with every individual package at every moment. It doesn't mean we shouldn't consider that as an important evolution as we look at our impact as a society. But look, I got to run a business that makes money today and that serves my clients. And today, consumers just aren't ready for this, no matter what they might respond to in a poll. So you have to adapt and adjust.
So you said something interesting, which is, putting something in a reusable package isn't the win. It's hitting the reuse rates. How do you define success in the context that your business is sort of gravitated towards?
Well, I think that we use these three pillars of economic, operational, environmental. The environmental, it's contextual. What are you replacing and what are you replacing it with? How far is it being driven between locations and things of that nature? But generally, as long as you can get the reuse rate up above 90%, every life cycle assessment and study that's ever been done, private or there's a number of them out there that are public, show that it creates a profound environmental benefit. So not having to keep making new packaging when you can keep it in circulation 10 to 20 cycles is clearly better from a climate standpoint, water use and so forth. So then it just comes down to does it work, economically, and can your operation absorb it? And so it has to work on all three. We look for those cycles and those segments where we know the circulation rate is viable and possible, and then make sure that we're designing the system and the package so that it does become cost efficient. You got to use it. It's reusable. It's going to be more expensive to manufacture up front. But over time, you'll start to benefit. And our pitch to retailers and brands is, we're only going to do this. We've learned we should only pitch you if it's going to save you money. So, can we go in and say, look, you're wasting money on single use. You're going to save money when you switch to reusables, or when you didn't have a choice because regulations or sometimes C-suite directives forced you into reusables. But companies are just not going to switch to reusable unless it's economically viable. And generally, they're not going to do it unless it's cheaper, because they don't do anything unless it's cheaper. That's the whole point, is you're trying to optimize your business. So we have to find those segments where it's going to save you money, really.
And is that sort of long-term payback something you find everybody understands and is willing to come with you on that journey for? Or are they just used to unit economics that are, listen, the cost of single use per unit is so low that it's easier just to keep doing what we're doing?
It's usually not that hard to get a first meeting, but sustain, because like I said, it's packaging spend and impact. There's a lot of attention to it right now. So I think companies are really aware that they need to show progress, not just for the optics of it, but these are humans who read the climate news too. It's not, it's not like it's the sustainability team that's like dragging the purchasing department around. Like, we're finding that the purchasing group is also open to the conversation. But the realities of the implementation challenges can't be overlooked. And, a very common thing, for example, is if we are implementing reusable packaging for, say, a retailer, and they're using it from their, shipping from their warehouse to their stores. The team that manages that leg has their own P&L and their own budget. And then the store team has their own budget. And what our companies who use us have learned is that they save a lot of labor in the store, because our boxes are a lot more efficient to open up and break down. And the retail team doesn't have to spend nearly as much time in the store just opening boxes and taking out merchandise. So they get this labor savings. But that's usually on the retail team's budget, not on the logistics team budget. So the logistics team has a budget for cardboard. And we say, well, look, here's one of the really compelling reasons to switch. And like, but that's not my budget. I'm not going to get credit for that. That goes on the other guy's budget. So those are the real, that's the real nuts and bolts of it. You have to, you have to understand and address those things straight on. And that's where a lot of this stuff either moves fast or moves slow, is the just day-to-day challenges of individuals in large companies and what they manage and control, and what their personal impact from taking on that project might look like. And sometimes it's maybe not compelling enough for them in their seat, and you have to figure out a way to move past that.
I was smiling because in my past life consulting, we worked with a lot of retailers that were early in the omnichannel evolution, and were starting to offer things like fulfilled from store, or order online, pick up in store, and the exact same dynamic was a big part of it. Their labor was going to be used to pick and pack the order. But the online team got all of the credit for the sale. And so there was a lot of internal tension for years about how do we incentivize people just to do the right thing for the business and the customer. And then, we don't want them working against their own comp model, but our current comp model doesn't incentivize the desired behavior. So it is interesting, though, again, because to all the good points we've made about consumers, you can influence behavior in an organization through a lot of those, how you define and measure success, and, what you're incentivized and compensated to do.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, everyone likes being a hero because they save money for their company. So, leading with that is usually a good place to start. And we've been doing it long enough now to kind of be able to identify where are those cycles within the logistics of a brand that we can create, hero moments for them. And so when you have that, you have that product market fit and can just really lean in hard on selling it there. That's when you're feeling good. And, it only took us 7 years. So, yeah. But here we are. So
looking at some of the clients that you list on your website, I see some patterns, but where have you found that density of, demand or a good fit? Is it stuck in a certain profile of product category? How would you just characterize where you see the pattern of interest?
Yeah, I think today it's sort of settled in most prominently in two use models. One is that internal logistics, kind of warehouse to store, or store, or the reverse for product returns, and generally for apparel and shoes. I mean, those are high volume product categories. Obviously, they don't need a lot of specialized packaging. Usually they tend to just use the same size cardboard box over and over again. It kind of lends itself to a first adoption. It's a lot harder. We work with Target and Walmart and others, but they sell everything ever made anywhere. And so that's its own logistics challenge of if it's a bicycle or a snowblower or a, you know, a bottle of Coke, like it's a little bit harder nut to crack from an op standpoint. Today, it's mostly shoes and apparel for that reason, though, you know, we have examples otherwise. And just set of cardboard, it's going back and forth in reusables and they can keep it in circulation and save money. The other application is, frankly, reusable grocery bags. Because single-use grocery bags are getting banned, which is often a good thing, but can have these knockoff impacts that still are a challenge. So, you know, instead of getting a really thin single-use plastic bag, people are using dozens, hundreds a year of reusable shopping bags that they don't reuse, which are more plastic. So they're sort of consuming more plastic in these reusables than they were in single-use. And now retailers are having to kind of figure that out. And that's where, you know, we've been stepping in to kind of create these loops and reuse cycles that can allow it to make some sense.
And did you participate in the Closed Loop Partners initiative on that front? Am I remembering that right?
We've done a couple of different projects with them. Yes, a project through them with Walmart and one just this past year with CVS and Target. And all around that, and obviously, you know, look, it's happening at the same time that in-store retail, particularly for grocery, has been evolving so much as well. Because now you have, obviously, you have in-store shopping like you always did. But then you have people buying online and driving up into a parking spot to get their order brought to their car. And you have home delivery through Instacart and other vendors. So there's all these different customer journeys that are happening for the retailers. And the absence of single-use shopping bags only complicates those journeys. And so I like to say that packaging, reusable packaging, becomes both an enabled by and an enabler of a lot of this evolution in retail, because you have this tool. You got to give if they're pre-buying it, you have to transfer it to the customer somehow. You're giving it to them in something. It's no longer a single-use shopping bag. So how are you dealing with that? That's an example of that segment I said, where companies are being forced into reuse, whether it made sense or not economically and operationally and environmentally. Oh, well, you know, that's the reality. Like in New Jersey, no single use shopping bags, period, not even paper, since last May. So you got to do something. So that's where we're coming in to help those brands and others to sort of implement reuse systems that can work within that constraint.
Yeah, got it. So just stepping back to apparel and footwear, you know, if I can observe a couple characteristics, just to echo a little bit of what I heard you say, those are obviously non-perishable, solid products. So they're not going to leak. They're not going to spoil. That they don't need a lot of secondary packaging. Higher price point than the bottle of Coke that you referenced. Do you see other categories with similar characteristics that may also have potential?
I mean, really, you just need you need two things for reusables. You have to get them back a lot, and you have to get them back cheap. And so cheap is never one at a time. You know, that's the big problem with a lot of those e-commerce models is that I'm buying a pair of jeans. It's sent to me in a reusable. I'm mailing you back one reusable package at a time. Very expensive. And also, as we touched on, consumers just won't do it enough anyways. But even if they did, it's I'm taking a 20-cent poly mailer bag or a $1 cardboard box, and I'm replacing it with an asset, a reusable package, and I'm paying UPS $3 or $4 to get the thing back. You know, like it's just way more expensive. So you have to be able to get them back in bulk, and you have to get them back a lot. And retail footprint creates a lot of attractive opportunities for that. If it's an employee managed process, they're taking all the empties and putting them all together and sending them back at once. So the cost is really reasonable. And then like those reusable shopping bag programs and similar, they're being returned to the store. So now you're having this consumer-led reaggregation. You can bring it back in bulk. And so it's actually less important what the thing is that's being shipped and what kind of package. We've done wine. We have a reusable wine box that we've done for a company in Europe and certainly electronics and others. You know, the box works. It's the logistics system that has to underlie everything.
Yeah, as you're talking, I'm thinking of all these programs that I've seen piloted and some have worked, some haven't. You know, most of my focus has been in grocery and CPG. And the value of the store in that logistics equation, I think, is pretty profound. One example was Loop by TerraCycle. When I first participated in the pilot, it was a doorstep delivery program, and it's since evolved into a brick and mortar only integrated model. And I think a lot of what has been learned over decades of online grocery in general, in terms of the superior economics of having shoppers do a lot of the work versus having picking, packing, and delivery done by the retailer, it helps to have the store as a central point of logistics for the customers and the operator.
Yeah, it's just, this is the reality is just math. It's just, at the end of the day, it's fun to work in a category on a product that has the potential for social value and reducing impact, but it only happens with scale, and scale only happens if it's a good business and it makes economic sense. So those are the sort of building blocks of how you create scale and how you have economic success. Is logistics are expensive. You got to figure out your way through that, and having the consumer play a part has been one important strategy.
Are there other things that you can do to increase the number of circulations? Is traceability a big part of this? Do you track individual assets and say, hey, we actually know where it is? Does that pay back?
Somewhat. It has to be the icing, though. It can't be the cake. So that kind of stuff, like data and tracking, I think the instinct of a lot of reuse companies has been, well, the basic model isn't cost effective today. So we're going to create other sources of value, like through data. You're just adding complications and layers to the process. And that's usually not a very good business strategy, is like, well, my basic thing doesn't work, so let me make it more complicated and harder and more expensive, and then somehow I'm going to reach some point where I'm crossing a threshold and all of a sudden it's victory. I try and run in the exact opposite direction and say, like, what is the dead simplest thing we can do here to make this a viable approach? Cardboard is dumb and cheap and easy, which is what makes cardboard really great. It's not like, so if I'm going to compete with dumb and cheap and easy, generally, I need to be dumb and cheap and easy. So like the base foundation for, I think, reuse needs to be like, no, it just works because it works. Then you can layer in things like data and customer engagement and things like that, ways of building a brand loyalty that just make it even that much better. But they better be the icing. Otherwise, I think, the evidence is pretty strong that it's not sufficient to take a bad model and make it a good model. It takes a good model and it makes it a better model when you have that in place. So, and the other thing I would say is that if you have a really highly effective circular system in effect, the tracking becomes like a lot less important because they just stay in circulation. You don't need to invest in a lot of active management of the asset because the asset is doing what it's supposed to be doing. So a good system negates the need for a lot of active management. And that's our goal because it's cheaper. So in general, everything is individually barcoded. We have RFID packaging for some clients, et cetera. But that becomes sort of the fallback rather than, you know, the star of the show.
Fair enough. So what is it then that defines a functional, efficient, you know, in the absence of those things, what sets you up for success?
I think it is that it's a simple process that, you know, the users are trained on and then they just execute. And that's true certainly for the internal logistics, you know, clients like Vuori or Happy Returns that UPS just bought, who use our packaging for the forward and back. You spend 10 minutes training them on what you do with the box and then they just do it. You know, that's that. And they keep going. And we have, like with Happy Returns, we have boxes that we made for them 3-4 years ago that are still in circulation. And I know because I'll go into one of their drop locations and I'll see the box behind the counter. And I can tell by the design that that's one we made over 3 years ago for them because the designs have evolved and the branding's evolved. And so, and they don't actively track each box and keep an eye on how many cycles it's had because they've just learned it. They don't have to. And on the consumer side, it's similar. Like with the reusable shopping bag programs, the initial instinct was, okay, we need to have an app and they're going to download the app and there's going to be this whole thing and they're going to have a coupon and they're going to scan. We're going to scan the bag out and we're going to scan the bag in and everyone's going to know all the stuff. And that just adds a lot of layers of cost and organization and training. And it doesn't move the needle that much. You have to just align it to how consumers are living their lives and they're going to do the thing. They may do it less, but the cost of implementing it is so much lower. And the cost of running that program is so much lower that you're ahead of the game compared to some profound behavior change, app-driven Silicon Valley dream utopia future. It's not generally going to pay off.
Even if there's augmented reality involved?
I know. I'm kidding. Well, the internal joke.
What if it's powered by AI?
I had a joke with the team that I said, I wonder how long it'll be until somebody in the reuse community posts about how they're implementing AI for their reuse. And it was not even a day. I mean, that was the thing that was insane. It was not even a day until someone saw posting how AI was somehow magically now going to make reuse work where it hasn't. Good luck. That's not what I'm doing.
Yeah. I don't want to take the conversation too far in that direction, but there's always a buzzword that finds its way into pretty much every business model.
Well, yeah. I mean, before we had people asking us if we were using blockchain. So, yeah, it's the same. It's always something new. Yeah.
Hey, folks, this is the part of the show where we say thank you and see you soon to the general audience, plus and higher tier members of decarbonize.co. Stay tuned for the rest of the episode.
Well, this has been fantastic. If folks want to learn more about Returnity or get in touch with you, where would you send them?
I would love for people to check out our site. It's returnity.co. You can email us through there and reach out. I'd love to chat about anyone interested in the space. And yeah, thanks for all the great questions.
Thanks again.
Thanks for listening. I'm Keith Anderson, the executive producer and host of Decarbonizing Commerce. Sonic Futures handles audio, music, and video production. If you enjoy the show, we'd really appreciate it if you took a moment to subscribe and leave a review or share it with a colleague. For the full episode and more member-exclusive insight and analysis, join the Decarbonizing Commerce community at decarbonize.co. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of Decarbonizing Commerce.
Hey, it's Keith Anderson from decarbonize.co, inviting you to join our brand new Slack community for retail, e-commerce, and consumer product professionals that want to keep up with what's new, interesting, and actionable in industry, climate, and sustainability action, and connect with your peers. As I got into this work, one of the things that I found so invigorating is how passionate and willing to help everyone is. but I haven't found a community composed of people across functions in the industry that are working in or want to work in climate and sustainability. And so we're launching the community to connect both sustainability experts and practitioners and people in conventional roles like product design, packaging, supply chain, marketing, and merchandising to share their work, ask for help, connect about career opportunities, keep up with the latest industry development. And we'll be previewing who our upcoming guests on the podcast will be and giving you an opportunity to pose questions to our guests. So I can't wait to meet you and have you meet some of the other members of the community. To join us, you can visit decarbonize.co. You'll see a call to action on the homepage, or use the intelligence menu at the top of the page where you'll also see a link to join.